Best Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
All right, we are back on the Success Leaves Clues podcast. Thank you for bearing with us while we took a bit of a break at the end of the summer. You got to take a break once in a while. It's good for the soul. Al and I were both away. Al was riding his bike through Europe. And maybe, Al, you want to say something about that because it sounded like an amazing trip. For me, I might sound a little bit different because on my flight back from Porto, we explored the north of Portugal this time. We had a fellow that clearly had a cold, and I said to my wife, I said, okay, that's coming for me. It's just a matter of time. So if I do sound a little bit different, hopefully by next time we record, I sound a little bit better. But for now, you'll just have to bear with me. Al, how was that bike riding trip?
Well, it was great and something I always try and do every year. And like you said, important to take that break and rejuvenate the body and the mind. So that's what I did. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, exactly. Well, as you know, my favorite time of the week, the month, depending on when we're recording, it's always on a Friday. Podcast Friday is my favorite day. And we are really thrilled today to have with us Larissa Holmes. Larissa is a trailblazer in fostering meaningful connections for women. As the co-founder and CEO of Coterie, Larissa is on a mission to improve women's longevity by building stronger social bonds, starting through the power of sport. Larissa, great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we can't wait to dive into the incredible work you're doing at Coterie. And again, thank you to our good friend, Drew Lindsay, for the introduction. I've said it, if you listen to the podcast, you've heard me say it, great people know other great people. And this is just another example. So why don't we start with Coterie as such an inspiring mission. Could you tell us a little bit more about the work that you're doing and the impact you're seeing so far?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you did a great job kind of introducing the company. I think for me, my mission personally, it really extends and is very tied to the Coterie mission. I feel like this is a mission I've personally just been on for my entire life. It doesn't kind of start with Coterie. I think Coterie is just an evolution of my own personal mission to continue to elevate and equalize women within this world. And I think there's so many different ways and so many people are working on this mission and it's great. I've found this niche space with kind of combining sport and the power of community to really help utilize these opportunities for women and help women redefine what it means to be an athlete and start to take advantage more of opportunities that happen in sport spaces that aren't just about the game. I'm sure we've all had our own experiences of connections, business opportunities, job opportunities that really can happen on a golf course or in a tennis court or really just in these social sport spaces. So really big part of the mission of Coterie is to help get women out and get women connected and start to see themselves participate more in these spaces.
In your answer at the beginning, you were saying this is something, a mission you've been on for a long time and you found this niche space. Is this something you had growing up that you experienced through sport?
I was a varsity athlete. I was a fencer, a very random sport.
You're the first fencer we've ever had on.
Probably the first and the last. It's a very small group of us. So I fenced competitively saber. There's a couple different weapons within fencing. So it's an individual sport. You know, it's not basketball or soccer, one of these team-based sports. But outside of that, until I started doing that late in high school, I wouldn't have really ever considered myself an athlete. I definitely took a big hiatus, like many women in my own sport career, after kind of doing varsity level athletics. I went into management consulting. I was a management consultant at Deloitte, and then started to have a family and all the things that definitely remove women a lot from the athletics world, right? You get really focused on your career and having a family, and it can be really hard to squeeze in time or prioritize time for yourself in those spaces. But for me, I definitely saw the power of sport when I was at Deloitte. The opportunities that you got by saying yes to participating in golf tournaments with clients, with vendors, with suppliers, really opened a lot of doors. And anyone who's been in that world definitely knows that it's really not about the game. It's about who you're meeting with, what kind of conversations you're having, and really putting yourself out there. And do you have the right attitude? It's less about, did you have a good shot? It's more about conversing with people. And you have people's undivided attention on a golf course, no cell phones for 4 hours. Where else do you get that these days? It's a huge opportunity. And so I definitely experienced the power of sport through my career and realized that you don't have to be good. There's lots of people that aren't good, but women often self-select out, especially kind of these more private club sports, if you will, like golf and other sports like tennis, you know, as well, in certain environments can be very off-putting, right? There's a lot of etiquette around them. A lot of when you show up to clubs, where do you go? Do you check in first? Do you pick up a golf cart? Like, what is that etiquette and protocol? And so I think I definitely started to hear a lot of women saying they wouldn't participate for what I found is kind of silly reasons, not knowing what to wear and didn't know certain terminology. And so it's like, it's not about that. That's not what these spaces are about. You're not playing on the PGA Tour. You're getting out for work.
Well, that's what I'm wondering, because when I think back to when I came into my career, and we're going back almost 30 years now, and everyone had said, make sure you play golf because that's where business is done. And unfortunately, in my younger days where I should have been doing golf lessons and pursuing that, I was pursuing martial arts. And I'll tell you a funny story later about golf lessons that I had in the last 5 years. And the guy just said, yeah, I can't fix you. But I'm just wondering, you know, when I first came into business, it was very much, business was still very much an old boys club. And that world has changed. And I look within our own company and opportunities and how people are treated, which I'm very happy to see. But I'm wondering if, are there still barriers, and maybe they're perceived barriers or obstacles for women? Exactly what you think about, like, oh, well, I don't know how to play. I don't know how to check in. How are you helping people get beyond those, maybe even perceived barriers, even if they're not real?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I think there could be a whole separate podcast, and there's many podcast series dedicated to, you know, whether it fully has changed from this old boys club or not. I think there's still a lot of barriers for a lot of women. And I do think there's differences amongst industries as well. Certain industries have evolved faster than others, but there's a lot of ways that women also don't always help themselves. It's an unpopular opinion, but, you know, when you self-select out of opportunities before even trying, you're not helping yourself, right? You have to kind of get in the game. The best way to finish it is to start. You have to stay in it, right? So I'm a big believer in giving a lot of women, and again, this goes back to your first question where I said I've really been on this mission my whole life, which is to be an example to other women, to say, just get out there and do it. And if you can see it, people have an easier chance of believing that there's a spot for them. So I've always been that woman that, I have a terrible golf game. I have 3 young kids, a company, a very busy life. I'm lucky if I get out half a dozen times a year. And it's at this point, I joke that it's all about just muscle memory. I just need to be in it. And then when I get later in my career and I'm a bit older, my kids are older, I can actually care about improving or being even good. But to me, it's about getting out and having fun. And so I know so many women I've helped get out, they kind of laugh and are like, oh, you've made me feel a bit better. I'm like, because I'm terrible. I know, like, it's refreshing that, you know, you don't have to be that good. So I think it's really about helping yourself first. I'm a big fan of saying, regardless of what's happening, and you could debate the old boys club or this or that, but you have to have the confidence to just get out and say yes. That's the first step in any way of improving your own life, whether it's in sport or career advancement or any area.
So, Larissa, I'm a big believer in sport myself, and my kids, when they were younger, organized sport, and I can see how it helped them. Like you say, you know, learn to overcome adversity. When you're playing sports, you lose far more than you win.
Yeah.
So I hear where you're coming from. I'm curious if you can maybe, someone comes to you and says, hey, I love what you're talking about and I really need your help. Can you maybe walk through, I guess, some of the logistics, like help me understand what it is you're going to do with someone who comes to you and says, I need your help?
Yeah, so we have a platform that helps connect women. So there's a couple different sides to the platform. One is content and education. So we have vetted professionals on the platform in golf and pickleball as our two starting sports that help give women that confidence to just get out and say yes and answer a lot of the questions they might have, whether it's about what to wear, where to check in, basics of a swing, different types of swings, you know, what the different clubs are. I mean, it goes on and on. We have hundreds of videos and kind of tip sheet format. We have, those are our two primary formats for content. And then we wrote an AI matching algorithm, so to help women actually get connected. We're focused in the US, so we aren't targeting the Canadian market for the moment. So this is all focused in the US, but we give them that community, because what we've heard from a number of women are, I'd love to get out and play, but I don't have anybody in my network that I know plays. Or where do I get started? How do I find people to play with? And women typically find a lot more comfort in playing with other women to start. Our target is really that beginner, early intermediate woman who's interested in playing. We have spun out and done a B2B product that isn't only focused on women. It's actually focused on helping the sport professionals grow their own communities. So we heard a lot of positive feedback about our platform. And so that actually gave us the idea of saying, hey, we could monetize the platform itself. And so we've spun out a SaaS platform that mirrors our own, that we built for our own community, to actually help the sport professionals as well. So we have two sides to that. So it depends who we're trying to help. But those are kind of some of the key aspects. And then we have a number of different features depending on the B2B product or the B2C.
So maybe we could back up a little bit, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I know we've talked about some of the management consulting that you did at Deloitte and founding multiple companies. So you've worn many hats along the way. But can you talk about maybe some pivotal moments that occurred in your life that led to you specifically starting Coterie?
Yeah, I mean, I think working at Deloitte was a huge turning point. I have an undergrad in art history and a master's in museum management. I am not your typical candidate for management consulting. People look at my LinkedIn and always try to say in very polite ways, oh, you look like you have a very interesting background. Can you tell me how you made those jumps? And I'm like, no, you could be honest. It's okay. It's a bit of a windy path. But I'm such a believer in the power of networks. I was working at a nonprofit, leading the operations for a national nonprofit in Canada. And one of our board members actually kind of tapped me on the shoulder, who was a senior partner at Deloitte, and said, I really think you're ready for something bigger and you could be doing even more. And that was how I got introduced to Deloitte. I never even considered management consulting. When she first tapped me on the shoulder, I had to Google what management consulting was. I didn't know. I didn't come from that world. You know, I was in the arts. My mom was a teacher. It wasn't like I grew up kind of in the business world. So I had to take a leap of faith and kind of bet on myself. So I really think I obviously had to jump through all the hoops and a couple extra rounds of interviews, I think, given my background. I had to learn what case studies were, how to present them. If I wanted it, I knew I was going to have to like work my ass off to get this. So working at Deloitte was a huge turning point for me. It's obviously a huge brand, great recognition in the market. It has a great reputation for growing people, investing in their people. Consultants learn a ton. They put you through so much training. I joke that I got paid to do my MBA because of the type of training that they put you through. It's phenomenal. I'm a huge fan of the big four firms. And then leaving Deloitte was a big turning point too. It was a really hard decision, but I knew I wanted to get into tech, and that wasn't our market at Deloitte. We work with Fortune 500 companies. We didn't work with growth stage companies, but I got exposed to tech because of Deloitte. They started a partnership with Communitech out in Waterloo, and I was doing a bit of pro bono work for some of the portfolio companies out of there. And that was where I said, hey, I think this marries some of the things I love about consulting with taking away some of the things I didn't like. I didn't want to be traveling all the time. I was a road warrior. I was traveling Sunday or Monday to Thursday every single week with Deloitte. I was over it. You do that for long enough and then the novelty wears off. I've had quite a few turning points, and then working for Borwell, which is, you know, obviously a huge brand now, but at the time was 17 people. Andrew and Eva took a huge bet on me, and they're phenomenal founders. And I really got to learn from them and be their right hand to scaling that company. And I'm immensely grateful for that. And it gave me a lot of confidence that I could then go off and give it a shot for myself.
You said a couple of things there that we've heard over and over as a common theme in some of these podcasts that we do with people. And, you know, number one, it wasn't a straight line to where you got to. It was a number of variations along the way, and you didn't have in mind, hey, this is what I'm going to do. It was a winding path, like you said. And the other thing, again, we've heard over and over again is someone recognized in me the potential that I had and said, you know, I think you should. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. I just found it interesting that you said those two things again, because that's a theme that we've heard over and over again.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's hard for people to see their own potential, right? Mm-hmm. It takes somebody else recognizing that in you and gives you a bit of that confidence to say, maybe I can do this. I don't know why you would have ever tapped me on the shoulder for management consulting, but if you believe I can do it, sure, why not?
Why not?
You know? I mean, that and the arrogance of your 20s.
What's the worst thing that can happen?
Exactly.
A dangerous combination. But I feel very lucky, very grateful that it did work out and I got phenomenal experience. I've always worked really hard to kind of give back, especially to women and LGBT folks, to kind of mentor and bring up that next generation and kind of pull people along with me. It's been a really important mission of mine.
It's the old pay it forward. Right?
Yeah.
Someone has done that for you. You want to carry on that tradition and help other people along the way.
For sure.
Thankfully to this podcast, I mean, we talk with so many people in different walks of life, but a lot in the tech world and startups, and we get to hear those stories on the podcast and over coffees and over lunch. And hopefully, Larissa, there's a lunch in our future. But what we've heard and what we've seen and what we've lived, a little bit different. We're not in tech, we're in financial services, but scaling companies, it's no easy feat, right? Especially in the tech space, as you've seen. Can you share a specific challenge that perhaps you faced during your critical growth phase and how you overcame that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of goes to what it takes to scale. I think like scaling can be really difficult. You know, I was in financial services for over a decade. I focused in financial services at Deloitte, and then obviously Borwell is a fintech. So I think that scale obviously means different things at different stages. But understanding the focus that it takes to scale can be really hard on the execution, right? You're kind of trying to build the plane while fly it, is what everyone always says. And you don't know what you don't know. So I think a big lesson that I learned really early on was, again, it kind of goes back to your network idea, like not being afraid to ask other people who have been there, done that. I find, especially in tech, maybe less than traditional financial services, when I was working with larger scale companies, maybe not as much, but definitely in tech, there's such a willingness and a camaraderie around entrepreneurship that people want to see other people succeed. And people are very happy to give you 30 minutes if you have a very specific question or you need help in something. So I learned really quickly to not take that for granted. I was strategic, but gave my time. And I also asked of other people. And when I faced certain challenges, I wasn't afraid to admit it and say, hey, as a company, we're going through this. I know you guys are past this stage. Like, what did you do at this stage? How did you kind of deal with some of these operational challenges or these strategy challenges that we might have had, right? What's your decision-making framework? I really was not shy to kind of ask, and I still am not. I've given a lot of my time as well back to the community, so I don't feel so bad about popping people an email or shooting a quick text to ask for help.
I think I was actually surprised about how willing people are to help. Because even through the podcast community, the people that we've chatted with, like we talked to entrepreneurs, we talked to founders, we talked to chief people officers, VP of people. And I was struggling with something last week, and I reached out to someone we've had lunch with once. We've had her on the podcast, Christine Song. A lot of people know who Christine is.
Yeah.
And I reached out to Christine. I said, in your experience, what have you found with this particular question? And Christine's busy. She's up to her eyeballs with work. But because of the relationship, and I would hope she knows we're trying to do a good job and bring people together and create a community and help each other, she gives me this huge document of information that probably would have taken me years to, you know, come up with. And I just thought, if there are people that are listening to this or think they're alone and they can't ask anybody for help, there's a whole community. And I found, especially, you know, on LinkedIn, There's this business community of people that want to mentor other people, that want to help people. So that was a pleasant surprise. It sounds like you found the same as well.
For sure. And I mean, I'm lucky enough too that I started executive coaching. I got my certification while I was at Borwell and started coaching founders and CEOs primarily, just because I was already kind of doing that within internal, and then just sort of started to put some formality around it. And yeah, I think it's so refreshing for people when people hear other people just being vulnerable, right? If you're the one willing to kind of show your cards first, it really lets down a lot of barriers, even a lot of challenges I've had with growing the business. When I talk to other founders and people say, how's it going? The typical answer that most founders will give you is good. How about you? Or everyone likes to pretend it's up and to the right. And a couple of times I've just been like, actually, we're having a really tough month. We're really trying to figure out, do we go all in on this B2C or do we go all in on the B2B? And we got this super exciting partnership with the LPGA, but we're still seeing some momentum here. Like, I'm really struggling to make this decision. And as soon as you kind of admit that vulnerability with somebody, I find it's like this automatic, you can kind of see the like, oh, thank God you're going through something hard too. And actually, here, let me give you this insight. But oh my God, I'm in this really tough spot. And I think I have to terminate my first employee. I know you used to be a chief people officer. Can you help me with this? And I'm like, absolutely. Like, but it's just so funny that somebody has to go first. And I'm very much the person who goes first. I'm not afraid to say, actually, this is what I'm struggling with and you can be helpful. And a lot of people, for whatever reason, and I think it's good to be selfish, but I think it gives people a sense of fulfillment. You're giving them an opportunity to remind themselves that they do know things and that they are knowledgeable and that they can be helpful. I think it goes both ways.
Larissa, you brought up some great points so far. And, you know, in terms of some of the coaching and some of the startups and some of the consulting that you've already done, looking back or maybe looking forward, would you say that there's anything that you could identify that maybe founders focus on during some of those early startup stages that you would say, well, you know what, like, rather than focusing on this, maybe you should focus on that? Like, is there anything that you might, you know, give advice to some people that maybe they're hung up too much on one thing and they should be focusing on another?
I think staying focused in general, right? I think founders, it's really easy to have like a bit of a recency bias or be a bit of a squirrel, as I always say. You kind of are chasing the most recent thing, and you have to in the early days. There's a certain amount that you do have to do, but you also can't see things through to fruition if you don't really just double down and focus. So I think like some of my advice to early stage founders is always focus in on the one thing. Like, what's that one problem you're trying to solve? And a lot of us have been told it, but we don't always follow the advice of, you can't do everything. You can't be everything. So pick one thing and kind of go all in on that and stay the course. And at least as long as you're getting to those metrics or set those milestones, define success or failure, and then set your parameters and just execute. It can be really easy to get distracted along the way. And it really can be hurtful, I think, to your business as well as to your team, to be quite honest, because it's hard to constantly be flip-flopping, context switching, or changing priorities on the team. It can be very exhausting to a lot of people. So I think focus and defining your parameters of success within a defined period of time can be really important. And people often forget to kind of time box it or do both of those things, right? You have to define the success and define like your minimum criteria that you're willing to accept, and then set it and say, okay, that's by the end of the quarter, we have to meet this. And if not, we're pulling the plug on this initiative and we're moving on. But you have to kind of have both of those core pieces. And then you have to have an accountability partner. And I think that's where on the coaching side, having a coach, I mean, obviously I do coaching, so I'm a bit of a biased perspective, but I do think having a point of a person that really holds you accountable and doesn't just pay lip service, because unfortunately in your team, when you're paying people, you don't always get the response because there's a transaction component. People don't feel the same psychological safety to push back. Whereas as a coach, there's like limited skin in the game for this for me. Literally, you pay me to push back. And people who know me know like that's a very comfortable space for me. I'm very happy to kind of play devil's advocate, to kind of put on a different hat and push back to people and challenge people's ideas and perceptions that they already have. So I do think it can be really valuable, especially for founders and CEOs, to have somebody external to the business, even if it's an advisor or somebody that they meet with regularly that can hold them accountable to that focus and to those defined parameters of success.
Yeah, you made a lot of great points there. And I can personally attest to your last one about, you know, having a coach and getting some input from the outside and someone who will, you know, just question, ask you questions, make you think about things in a different point of view. So yeah, thanks. I think that's some great ideas and great advice.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say about, because Al and I have both been through coaching, and I'm glad you talked about that. And one of the things of value I saw was, especially my coach was a little bit older, he'd been in business longer than me. And I found the things that he was bringing to me, he was seeing around corners that I couldn't see around yet. And that was incredibly valuable because it kind of took my learning a much shorter period because he'd already seen that. So he already had experience around that. So I thought that was really great. Can I take a bit of a departure from business? Because one of my favorite things has been, we got this advice. It was actually from Christine Song when we had lunch with her. And she said, I love the podcast, love what you're doing. But I also love when you go a little bit further and you learn more about the person behind the role. So outside of business, who's Larissa? What do you do for fun? What's important to you?
Yeah, I mentioned I have a family. I have 3 kids, 7, 5, and 2. So I'm kind of in the thick of that early, young.
Busy times, yeah.
Busy time in a different way. I hear a lot about bigger kids, big problems. But right now I'm just making sure everybody stays alive. It's a bit of a triage. We're a pretty active family too. I'm very physically active. I really love cycling. We're a ski family. So we definitely do a lot of activities. So I'd say between the business and sport and recreational stuff, that's pretty much it. We used to travel a lot more before kids. We still get out, you know, and travel a bit, but it's really important to me. I think that my wife is also the CEO of a financial service company, and we both have kind of big ambitions career-wise, and our kids see us loving what we're doing too.
Yeah,
I think our parents' generation kind of did more of the working to serve life and working for the paycheck and things, but our kids definitely see that we love our work and we talk about it a lot, and we're lucky that we can involve them in certain things, you know, whether it's business trips or going to the office or things like that. They definitely see it. And then obviously the kind of like sport is near and dear to us. And Al, you mentioned it's, I think for me, I completely agree, because I didn't have it in the early years. I find it's been really important for me that our kids are raised with sport. I think it teaches them so much. Just so character building. Mm-hmm. Like you said, I think you put it really well, Al, that there's more losses than there are wins, and how you handle the loss, the teamwork associated with it, all these aspects, the discipline are really just so critical to long-term success, and especially for girls, right? 2 out of 3 of our kids are girls. And I don't know if you guys have seen the stats, but just, you know, the number of C-suite women that have kind of played sport, like a varsity level, is quite high. It really does translate into these leadership skills long term. Mm-hmm. So for us, that's really important around our values for our family. But we don't have much time for anything other than our careers and kids. I wish I played more golf. Drew and I have been trying to get out and play around for like almost a year now. So
I can definitely relate, Larissa, because my kids are finally, our third one started first year university this year. So for the first time in 21 years, we don't have kids around the house.
Congratulations.
Yes, congratulations. And I've said this many times, though, enjoy it while you can, because those will be some of the best years. And having kids is funny, because literally in the same second, you can think, I can't wait till they grow up and are on their own.
Yeah.
But I also don't want it to happen. And that thought happens at exactly the same moment. So enjoy it while you can.
Yeah, wise words.
Well, my favorite part of the podcast is always the end, because Al has modified his question a little bit, but it still gets the same point across. And I'm going to let him take it away. To me, you've already answered the question in so many ways, but we're going to throw it at you anyway, because maybe there's something else you want to add to it.
Yes. So a society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So are there any specific initiatives that you're passionate about right now? Maybe it's within Coterie, or maybe it's beyond from a personal vantage point. Anything that you can talk about?
Yeah, I touched on it a bit. I think just around my personal mission on women, I think the other side I haven't touched as much on, and I do it maybe indirectly, and I'm not the loudest person about it is just especially around kind of LGBT executives and leadership. I am very passionate about having more visible representation. You know, in tech, it's very straight, it's very white, it's very male, but I really am quite passionate about having more people that are just open about who they are. And I think you bring a lot of unique perspectives. We've had a different life experience. You face different adversities. And I feel very strongly that people should be, whatever it is, whether it's LGBT or a non-visible disability or different ability levels, right? Like, there's so much richness to the world in our differences. Yes, we have so much in common, but I think there's a lot of opportunity for me to continue to have a voice and take up space in a world with people that have had very different experiences than me.
That's some great words, and thank you for sharing that. I think that's really important to hear.
Well, this has been amazing. Thank you for joining us today and sharing your journey. For listeners who want to follow along with your journey or learn more about Coterie's mission, where can they find you?
The best place is LinkedIn. It's Larissa K. Holmes. Yeah, that's the best place to find me. I try to write on there. I'm trying to write more frequently and share more of the journey.
Okay, perfect. Thanks, Larissa. That does it for today's episode. We really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn. We've seen it yet again. Success leaves clues. We'll see you next time.
Thanks so much.